Hey, Andrew here, and really excited that we are hiring for a director of community and connection in our 7- and 8-figure owners community to help shape strategy and connect members online and in person. Specifically, looking for someone with amazing interpersonal skills and a track record of connecting, serving, and bringing people together, perhaps in the community or the hospitality spaces. Some great perks: you get to learn from deeply experienced owners. It's a 100% remote position, and you get an annual month-long sabbatical every year to rest, recharge, and grow. So if that sounds interesting, or you know someone who might be a good fit, all the details are at ecommercefuel.com/DOC for Director of Connection. And the deadline to apply is October 22nd. Thanks so much. The E-Commerce Fuel podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what OneClick Upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes. Get your first upsell up and running. Check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Carly Craig. She is the author of Email Is Not Dead. She's the COO at MiniKatana.com, which is an e-commerce store that specializes in very cool katanas, which are a fancy name for swords. She works over there with Isaac. They've built some really amazing brand, incredible marketers and operators. And she's also the co-founder of TequilaSunrise.co, which is an email marketing agency. And I have, through Isaac, through the e-commerce landscape, she's just kind of, been on my radar, someone who's been doing interesting things and wanted to have her on to talk about a bunch of stuff. Email, we're going to talk about operations and systems building and a few other things here at the beginning. But Carly, thanks for coming on. I'm excited to do this.
I am so excited for this. I have heard Isaac raving about you and this podcast and the community for such a long time now. So this is honestly an honor for me to come on and talk to you.
Thanks. Isaac's amazing. Just super kind, genuine, giving guy. And it's been fun getting to know him at the events and in the community over the years. So excited to be doing the same with you here. And I always ask, or frequently ask, what people are excited about. And like I said, when we were talking before we hit record, I think these conversations go a little differently in a great way than I was expecting. I'd love to hear, I don't do this very often. I think a lot of times people have a tendency to talk about their backstory way too much, and then it's like 40 minutes in, and then it's overdone. But you have a really interesting one and unique one, I think, that is unusual. So talk a little bit about it if you would, because you were saying you are from Bakersfield and kind of had a non-traditional route into what is now a really impressive e-commerce career.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I'm from Bakersfield, California. My upbringing is essentially like, I don't know, think trailer park, although not always trailer park. I lived in over 70 houses in my life now. Oh my childhood gosh.
Can I stop you for just a second? 70? How is that even possible? Like, would just you, your family would move so much or what?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm 29 now. So a lot of that happened in the first, early 20 years of my life. My mom moved us around a lot. She honestly would move in with like a new boyfriend kind of every, I don't know, 6 months or so. So we moved in with different people constantly. And so a lot of my growing up was either with a new boyfriend that she had, or with, if I was with my aunt or grandparents, or maybe I was with my dad, or it was just kind of like being passed around a little bit as a kid.
And then how did you make the jump between that and what you're doing now with just CEO at MiniKatana?
Oh man, it's quite the story. It involves, moving to Hollywood. I worked for a heart surgeon, eventually met a boyfriend that gave me my first laptop when, I don't know, maybe I was like 21, 22, an entrepreneur that really believed in me and saw the potential that I had and recognized the mindset that I had coming out of like the, I don't know, trailer park kind of mentality. And I spent a lot of years working on my personal growth, but also working in whether it was like an assistant role for a few years and then to eventually starting my agency.
You mentioned a switch going off for you in terms of victimhood, like feeling very much a victim and then switching that. And that was key to a lot of the growth that you've had. What happened specifically there?
You know what? I actually had a boss that recognized it in me. And he also, he pegged me as a potential COO for his business long ago, like, I don't know, 7 years ago, before I ever started my agency. And he wanted to try and work me into that role, but I had some big problems that would have stopped me from being effective in that role, which were mainly around my mentality and the way that I interacted with the world, which was very much in that victim mentality. Mm-hmm. So by some miracle, he had gone through this journey himself, like a very similar childhood to adult career path. He sent me to a like 3-day conference. It's kind of culty. I'm trying to think. what was it called? I can't remember the name of it, but it was life-changing. They taught me just like a different way to look at the world. And essentially, I started recognizing that nothing in life is actually happening to me. And I have so much power over where I'm going, what I'm doing, like who is in my life, all of it. And I was so powerless before that, you know, I couldn't have been in that COO role back when we talked about it 8 years ago or 7 years ago, whatever it was.
What did they talk about that conference? I've noticed, like, I feel like probably the biggest thing that has changed in my life with my worldview over the last 12 to 18 months is that I've come into contact with a couple. We all have victim mentalities to some degree or another, right? Like sometimes they're just extreme and keep us homeless, and sometimes that they're much more moderated. But I've had a couple personal experiences where I've just realized, like, if someone is in that space, you can't help. It's so hard to help them until they get out of that, right? Until they say, like, hey, like, if everything else is everyone else's fault, there's nothing you can do for them. You have no hope of changing them. So, and that's been a little hard because I've just had to walk away from some situations and people that I'm just like, I care about you, but there's just, I have no hope at affecting this in a positive way. So how did you, and from the outside, when you tell people that, like, it's so hard to see that and flip that switch. What was it about this cult-like experience that you went to that made the connection for you? Because I think that's something that's hugely powerful. And I mean, all of us need to some degree, but it was life-changing for you. So what was it? What did they say something? How did that work?
I think that it was recognizing that there is not only one way to see the world and that we all have our own unique perspectives and that there are tools that you can use or there are different frameworks that you can use to think through the things that happen in your life to, I guess, just build a different perspective. And it wasn't necessarily that 3-day conference. Like that was the beginning of me understanding that I had blind spots or that, you know, the way that I saw the world wasn't the way that everybody else saw it or that for me, it was that things were happening to me and that was what was making me sad.
Yeah. Well, if you remember the name of the cult event, let me know. It's the only time I'll say this, but I'll put the cult event link in the show notes for the episode.
Yes.
I want to pivot to talking about your role as COO of Mini Katana. You came in actually as, I believe, on the marketing front, up with marketing, but the creative team there is really well. Demand generation, I don't think was the issue was, I mean, you were selling stuff like gangbusters. Really, the issue was operations, logistics, like the behind the scenes stuff that needed. So you pivoted within the role, being like, okay, this is where I really need to jump in and help. What were the systems that when you came in were most instrumental in helping the business operate more efficiently, more profitably? Like, if you had to pick your top two systems or things that you overhauled as COO when you came in, what were those, and how did you do it?
Top two systems. Ooh, hard to pick two. I would say some of the first things that I did when I came in was like, I needed visibility into what was going on in the business. So yes, I came in for growth, but part of that focus on growth has to actually be building on something that is sustainable and scalable. And that was the first thing that I recognized. So, I mean, I think I actually got really lucky in that I got to naturally fall back into what I really love, which is the systems and operations. And so in light of needing that visibility, the first thing that we did was, like, I had access to the P&L, and I was going, this actually doesn't help me at all understand the action that I need to take in the business. So one of the first things that we did was take all of the expenses month over month, break them down by department, and literally go through all of them to identify, like, where are we wasting money in some cases? Where are we spending way too much money? And that was something that, because Mini Katana grew so fast and they were so, so good at marketing, that this part of the business didn't have as much attention on it because it didn't need to. So I think, again, although I have been quite experienced in implementing systems and EOS and using, you know, Rockefeller habits, I got lucky in that there was so much that was so very clear that I could do for Isaac and Mini Katana to get these wins. So number one, it was breaking down expenses and just understanding where the money was going, understanding cash, understanding COGS. We really had to get deeper into that. And then the next most impactful thing was definitely going into the team and making sure that we had the right people there and that they were doing the right things. So I went through and interviewed every single person on the team, depending on, I guess, the priority level that I was given, obviously coming in not knowing anybody. I had to go through and vet everyone. And I used my core values from my agency, actually. I just brought them over and worked off of those to go, okay, this is like the type of person that should be in this sort of environment. This is what this person in this role should be doing. And we fortunately now have a much better team in place that is better suited to do the work that we need them to do. I know that's very...
No, I'm tracking with you. Going back to the expenses part,
yeah.
What did you discover or changes did you make as a result of doing like a deep dive on the P&L? Like, one thing I try to do at least, if not every month, at least every 2 or 3 months is don't just look at the P&L, but go in and look at the line items, especially on your overhead and your expenses.
Yeah.
Click through in the Xero or the QuickBooks report or the Finalloop, whatever you're doing, and look at what's adding up to there. And it's oftentimes you'll have stuff that sneaks in that because it's hidden in the category versus line item, you forget about it, right? And it adds up. So what were the changes you made? Was it just kind of just fat cutting little things here and there? Or did you make any big changes when you did a deep dive on the P&L that really impacted the business?
Well, because it was being done in conjunction with the review of the team, just general overhead in that area went down a lot because we didn't actually need as many people as we had because things were just not as efficient as they could have been. That was probably the biggest impact at first, but there were a number of other things that then we were able to recognize were a problem. So the amount of money that was being spent on the employee ran warehouse, looking at COGS, and then going a little bit deeper and even understanding, okay, why is it that they're so high? Are there things that we can do to cut these down? And mind you, this is not all necessarily my idea. Like, Isaac and I now have this great community of e-com owners, founders, people that work within the businesses that can just like call things out and go, hey, why don't you look at this? So one of the things that actually Jeremy from Kitsch, shout out to him, was like, hey, look a little bit deeper at your COGS and your factories. And we ended up cutting COGS by like 40 to 50% this year, which is amazing. We moved from the employee run warehouse to a 3PL. There were a number of things on the operational side that we were just not even able to kind of trim the fat, but just completely change the way that the company operated in some ways to reduce expenses.
40 to 50% off COGS is massive. So how did you do that? Was that just negotiating with factories? Was that, what was involved with that savings?
Negotiating with factories. And then we also got terms, which we didn't have before. And then again, building on these things as well. So we cut down the actual cost significantly, and then we got terms, and then we even, you know, implemented like Parker and now have another 90 days on top of that or whatever it is. And so we were implementing a lot of different ideas and systems here to get to this place. It wasn't, I guess, necessarily just going like, where can I trim the fat? It was deeply understanding why we're doing things a certain way in the first place.
Yeah. You came in and you had the operations experience at your agency before, but you came in, and anytime you come into a new organization, you've got all this knowledge you've got to pick up. You don't know anything. You're starting from ground zero, at least in terms of like institutional knowledge, how the business works, et cetera. What, for someone who's listening right now, who's going to be bringing in a COO in the near future, like put yourself in the owner's shoes, what can they best do to set up that incoming COO for success? If you can kind of think back, like, what were the things that Isaac did that were really helpful, or that, you know, would have been super helpful to have? You don't have to specify which one, given he's such a good friend of both of ours on the show, but you can speak broadly. But what are the things that, if you were an owner going through this again with a new COO coming inbound, you'd make sure were in place to set him up for success?
Yeah. So I guess starting with that last question, what are the things that I would have in place to set them up for success? I mean, they can do this as well, but if you have some idea of the operating system that you want to use for your business, whether it is EOS, which I'm most familiar with, or using like systems taught with the Rockefeller habits, having an idea of the direction that you want to go with your operating system, and then having a vision, like a COO cannot do their job. Like their job is essentially to take what the owner, the CEO wants, right? And then make sure to orchestrate that throughout all of the company operations, throughout all of the people, and without understanding exactly what they want. So having that vision clearly defined, the COO cannot make the progress that they would have made otherwise. So that was one of the things that Isaac and I did have to work through, was figuring out, okay, we need to define what the vision is, what are the goals? And I guess kind of getting into EOS a little bit, it was then setting that vision, creating the scorecard, which is understanding, okay, over this year's time, how do we work backwards from the goal and understand what needs to be done in each department, in each quarter? Going further than that, setting ROCs and quarterly goals for each of the people in the leadership team, and just kind of cascading that through the company and making sure that everyone, like I said, like orchestrating everyone is on track to hit those goals. Because when you're dealing with, I think, you know, we are around 30 people right now, unless everyone is, you know, rowing in the right direction, like energy is being wasted. People are, have different priorities, or different things are communicated from different people. And the most powerful thing that an owner or CEO can do is just have that vision clearly defined for everyone, honestly.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit, or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement, or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. And so it sounds like that was for you and I think that was a pretty involved collaborative process. It wasn't just like an hour meeting you had with Isaac. You guys were very collaborative in that, building out that framework, and then you went off and executed it. Many, if not most people listening, are very familiar with Traction and EOS. It gets talked about a bunch of the forums. Rockefeller Habits is something I'm much less familiar with, and I would imagine other people are as well. Is that a similar system for kind of running a business like EOS? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So it's actually a book. I think it's called like Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. And he took all of the systems that John D. Rockefeller used and other big companies in the past had used and kind of boiled down their tactics into a checklist of 10 items. And, you know, those get a little bit more specific once you actually dive into each one of them. But for example, like habit number one, which is kind of non-negotiable in that like you can implement systems like kind of freely, I guess, with the Rockefeller habits, like whatever is most important for your business at the time, whatever is most pressing, et cetera. Number one is non-negotiable that you start with number one. So that is making sure that the team is healthy and aligned. And it goes back to the same thing as EOS. It's like you have a vision and everyone understands what that vision is. Everyone is on the same page and everyone is working towards the same goals. So there's a lot of crossover between the Rockefeller habits and EOS. I think, you know, EOS is designed more for like, I mean, what they say is like 10 to 250 people, where Rockefeller habits might be better suited for a company that is much longer much larger with a little bit more bureaucracy. Because that's what I would say I find more apparent with Rockefeller is a lot more bureaucracy, but they still teach a lot of really cool tactics and tools that you can use even in conjunction with the EOS systems.
Got it. Are you using EOS, I'm guessing, to run Minikitana?
Yes. So we're still in the process of implementing. It's supposed to take 20, 24 months to really get it solidly in place. And it never stops, right? Like you have to keep iterating on that and pushing it. I implemented EOS systems. I guess I don't have to say systems after I say EOS. Anyway, within my agency, that took me roughly 2 years, but that was 2 years working with an executive coach. So we met weekly and we're not only implementing systems together, but it was like every problem that I had with a person or hiring, whatever, we worked through that together every week. And so it was not just those systems, but it was like leadership coaching and all of these other things that we worked through as well.
So it took about 2 years working with an executive coach to automate your email marketing agency. What was the hardest part of that? Some things, I'm guessing, if I had to bet, I'm a betting man, and I would bet the hiring, the human element of it, the expanding, was that the hardest part to systematize? And did you do that? Or do you just still say like, hey, that's so important that I want to be involved in any hires or onboarding? So I guess two-part question.
Yeah. I mean, well, agency especially. Well, yes, agency especially, but even in a company like Minikitana, the people are so important. But agency is extremely critical because that's all you have, basically.
That's your service. Like that's what you're selling is people, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, we had to implement systems, especially on the hiring side. I mean, we implemented them on the back end as well. So in monthly reviews or annual reviews, the way that we interact with the team weekly, daily, in day-to-day life. But I think the most impactful thing was identifying those core values and like real core values, not like excellence, strength, kind of random words. Identifying the core values, having a system in place for interviewing people where we're trying to recognize the issues that we had in the past and not let those type of issues seep through again. And honestly, a lot of that came in the trial phase that we would have. So we built trials out for the different roles that we were hiring for. And we would have a trial for a week, 2 weeks, even sometimes a month to make sure that it was a good fit for not only the person coming in, but for us as well. Because aside from, you know, the person being able to do the work, wanting to do the work, there's also our team that we have to worry about. And if you're constantly introducing new people that are either leaving because they don't actually like it or they're not working out, like that's very impactful on them too. So we had to learn how to protect the team as well with an agency having so many people kind of, at least for us, we weren't hiring very well in the first couple of years.
What are your core values at the agency side? Because you're right. Like some people have really good ones. Like I think about Eric Van Holtz and Beard Brand. They have three. I think it's hunger, freedom, and trust. Mm-hmm. And I think it's cool because they're very simple. They're very unique and specific, easy to remember, but they have implications, not just like for kind of his personal worldview and the way he thinks about business, but also with that you can, they're great filters, right? If not filters, they're great ways of saying what's important in the company and how they operate. So I'm always curious to hear about, especially people that are kind of committed to having them a little different, which it sounds like you are. So what were the core values you have at your agency?
So we have 7 of them, and I think we actually should be narrowing it down a little bit. So I'll tell you my favorite one, and it's ability to figure shit out.
I love that.
That is my favorite number one core value. And what is that? Like resourcefulness. I guess there are like many different ways that you can describe that. But to us, like it was very clear, like, you know, you give somebody even in a trial, a problem where you recognize that maybe you have even purposely given some contradicting information, or, you know, you've done little things to test that specific core value to find out if they have the ability to like recognize the patterns or whatever it is that you're trying to test for. And that one's my most important one.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's just, I mean, I love that because I think about in teams or, you know, I've got kids, and one of the biggest things I want to leave with my kids is like the ability to figure stuff out on your own, because it's such a meta skill for everything in life. That one's super cool. What do you use on the real geeky side? This is getting to the technical side, the documentation. Like, are you on ClickUp? Are you like, how do you run the backside, the back end of documenting the systems and tracking them? Like, what's your systems tech stack look like?
So we're much further along with it in the agency, obviously years in versus Minikatana. So I'll tell you a little bit about that one. We work out of Asana. I think the project management tool is, they all kind of seem the same to me. I think you can really make any of them work. But what is important for us was identifying the most important standard operating procedures that we needed to have for day-to-day operation of the business, making sure to document those. And then we have a playbook that then is broken down by department and has SOPs for the main things that people need to know by department for whatever work that they're doing. And we took it a step further, and we have actually built training systems. I think we're using maybe Teachable, perhaps. We built training systems for each role in each different department so that when they come in, it's not only teaching them about the, you know, systems and processes perhaps that we use in the business, but it's also walking them through our core values, why those are our core values, giving a history of the business, like really, what is the word I'm looking for? we really automated even that process of bringing somebody into the business. Initially, it was all handholding. For the first few years, I trained just about every person. I mean, this is why I got a divorce. I'm working like 18 hours a day. Like, you know, we had 50 people on our team during like the peak of COVID. And that was, the first year that COVID hit, we had 50 people on the team. I was about to have a baby. And that was just when I started working with the executive coach. So you can imagine the crazy hours that I was working. And so anyway, through working with that executive coach, going through EOS, I think using a lot of the Rockefeller habits and a number of other tools that they taught, we really had to sort out that piece of training people and getting them up to speed as quickly as possible with the same exact information that everybody else has. Because one-on-one training is great, but like it's not
scalable.
Yes. Yeah. Not scalable. Exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned too on the ops side, you went from a warehouse to a 3PL, and I feel like you hear, it doesn't seem like you hear a whole lot of middle stories with this. It seems like you either hear this saved our business, I'm so glad we don't have to deal with this, it's been a godsend, and you hear the 3PL totally ruined everything. They shipped out the wrong products. They're like, customer service is just, you know, falling off a cliff in terms of fulfillment. What was your experience like going to a 3PL?
So it was a little bit rough, but to be fair, it wasn't on the 3PL. It was the way in which we delivered our product to them. So, you know, with things maybe labeled incorrectly or not labeled at all, or whatever the case was, like inventory counts were not accurate, things like that. So we went from a warehouse that was managed by amazing, amazing people that just didn't have experience in running a warehouse. And so they basically got our little mess. We gave it to them. We were like, here you go. And so honestly, we have had a lot of problems over the last month or so moving to the 3PL, but it was primarily around, you know, inventory issues or things being mislabeled. Honestly, they've went way above and beyond to get things sorted for us, fix things for us, working over the weekend, calling in extra people to help. I think even the CEO brought his family in to help one week to get shit done. Yeah. Like, they've been honestly great. And I've been working with our contacts there at the 3PL pretty closely the last couple of weeks, and we're really, really knocking out all of these issues that we have, whether it's mispicks or whatever the case may be. And it's starting to feel pretty solid. So we had a little bit of like a rough start, but ultimately it's a better decision for the business. And it does relieve a lot of headache, not only in being able to trust them with, shipping and negotiating shipping rates. And I mean, even the employees, like that, we now don't have a warehouse full of employees that then have to be managed. And like, that's just more mind space for me. So it really clears up a lot of that for me personally.
Starting to get a little low on time here, but one thing I want to make sure we talk about before we jump into the final lightning round, even though we didn't talk about it at all in terms of email marketing, which was originally where I thought we'd go, but we took a very hard right, which glad it worked out that way. Talk about systems and other things. Your book, Email Is Not Dead, wrote that, I think, the last year or two. I think the last year, I think. Talk for people who were thinking about, you've got a ton of email marketing agency experience, you've written this book. Talk a little bit about, if you would, what's in the book, why people might want to read it, and where they can find it.
Absolutely. So whenever I first started writing the book, I thought, oh, I know everything. This is going to take me 2 weeks and I'll be able to publish this, whatever. It actually ended up taking me like 4 or 5 months working on it full time. And what I quickly learned was that there were a lot of things that we did as an agency that we didn't actually even know why we did. And whenever you have to start explaining why you do things, I can't remember the quote. It's something about you don't really master something until you teach it. And that's really what I felt writing this, because I tried to break it down into each area of email marketing, I guess, on a high level. So from deliverability to flows to list building, et cetera. And really having to actually teach those things was like surprising for me, that I did not know nearly as much as I thought I did when I started writing it. But it was meant to be for somebody who, you know, is maybe running an email marketing program in-house, or is like the founder of a company that just wants to understand it to be able to manage their agency better or manage somebody on their team better, for somebody who I guess just wants some more insight from somebody who'd been doing it for many years and hopefully be able to apply a lot of what they learned right away. I include checklists in each of the chapters so that people can make sure that they're doing certain things. And it was meant to be like a guide to like email marketing for dummies, kind of. It's a little bit more high level than that, I think. But honestly, it's still very good. There's going to be another version of it coming out, because there are a lot of things that I've actually learned from going from agency to brand side that have changed the way that I think about a lot of these things now, fully understanding it from the other side, essentially. And so I would change a lot of what I talk about automations. I think about campaigns differently now. So much of it has changed. And so I'm hoping this next version is going to be, you know, a 10 times better.
Now, we may have to do a different follow-up discussion at some point. You've been on the agency side, right? And you've been on the brand side. And both players do things that are probably infuriating to the other player. So it would be super interesting to be like, all right, put on your agency hat. What are the owners doing that are just driving you crazy? Okay, put on your owner's hat. What are they like? That'd be a fun discussion to have at some point.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Well, check it out. Email Is Not Dead. You can find it at Amazon, of course. I'd love to cap this off with a quick lightning round if you're game. So I'm just going to fire a bunch of questions at you. Feel free to give me the quick and dirty answers, and we'll roll through them here.
Yeah.
How would you describe the e-commerce environment in 1 to 3 words right now?
Ooh, the first words I think about are not super positive. I mean, this is not 3 words, but you know, everybody saw this amazing growth through COVID, and now that things are coming back to like a normal, I guess, buying economy, or maybe a little bit reduced from that. People had built their companies on the idea that they were going to grow so much, or that they were preparing for this growth. Like they're working off of these trajectories. I think people have had a really hard time adjusting, not only adjusting, but also I think there's been a lot of ego in play in that, in seeing like this amazing growth and then recognizing that maybe that wasn't all us. And that was a lot. It was really attributed to COVID and people's buying habits changing during that time. Because I can tell you, running an agency, having access to hundreds of stores throughout that time and looking at their revenue, they were all shooting up. And let me tell you, they were not all doing something super special. Like it was the economy itself that was changing things. And I feel like people actually are a lot harder on themselves than they should be right now, because their company isn't growing as fast as it did 2 years ago, or whatever the case may be. But I think we're experiencing that right now.
Yeah, it's a hard time right now for sure. What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Fondest memory. I want to say playing tennis. My grandma was like my favorite person in the world. She loved tennis. And so I joined the tennis team in high school and like continued to play into adulthood as well because she loved it. And like, that was something that we could really bond over. So playing tennis.
So follow-up question, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on pickleball as an avid tennis player?
You know what? I actually have never played and I'm in a tournament next week. Connor from Ridge is, sorry, not Ridge. Connor from Hexclad is my partner in the pickleball tournament and he's going to have to carry the team, but he already knows that. So I'll let you know next week after I play.
There's a ton. Yeah. If you've played tennis, you'll be able to go on a pickleball court and be at a minimum, not terrible, most likely pretty good. So there's a ton of, you'll have a blast.
For Connor's sake, I hope so.
Yeah. You're in good hands, Connor. You'll be in good shape. If you weren't living, I believe you're in LA. I could be wrong. Correct if I'm wrong, but I believe you're in LA. If you didn't live in LA, where would you live and why?
Yeah. So I live in Vancouver in British Columbia now.
Apologies.
No, it's all good. I'm in LA all the time. I used to live in LA. I lived in Santa Monica and I loved it there. And that's where I would move back to if I had the option to do that.
We were talking, I always ask people like, what's something you're really interested in or like in the middle of, or kind of trying to get better at? You mentioned that you'd been working like with a coach, been doing a lot of dating and a ton of first dates. What are the top two things that first dates do to make a terrible impression? If you were to talk to people out there, be like, listen, what are you people smoking? Stop doing these two things. What would they be?
Ooh, one of the things is not gauging someone else's energy. So if, you know, like, you know, I kind of like you. If you like really, really, really like me, that's actually very unattractive. Like, I don't want you to like be clinging on to me. And also, I guess it goes the opposite as well. I guess for somebody that is self-aware enough to know whenever somebody else doesn't like you as much as you like them. So it goes both ways. But I think like matching energy is something really important to understand.
Yeah, total self-awareness for the win, 100%. Last question. How much money in the bank is enough? So you can answer this in either a lump sum. You're like, if I had X in the bank, if I had 10 million in the bank, if I made more in the future, that'd be nice. But like, I'd be very content with 10 million. That'd be enough. Or it could be an annual amount. It could be if I made $1,000,000, $2,000,000, $500,000, $1 million per year, whatever it is, that would be enough if I was guaranteed for the rest of my life. So however way you want to skin that cat, how much is enough?
I'm going to go after taxes and say that like on an annual basis, if after taxes I was making like $300,000 a year, I would be very comfortable living the lifestyle that I want to live, able to do all the things that I want to do. But actually, sorry, not making that much per month. I would just like to have that much to just for doing nothing. Although I wouldn't do nothing, but that would be, I guess, like the ultimate dream is if I had $300,000 put in my bank account every year.
Every year. Got it. Perfect. The after tax is a big one. I should actually clarify that. I may need to adjust the question. Well, Carly, thank you. So this has been super fun. Thank you for being up for kind of the shift in topics here. If you haven't checked out Mini Katana, very cool brand. Some of the marketing that they're doing is just really impressive. And they're just an impressive company overall. So minikatana.com. Also check out tequilasunrise.co for email marketing. They have we didn't get to this. I was hoping to talk about this. We ran out of time. The website you have there is phenomenal in terms of design, in terms of copy. It's just really well done. So I'm going to steal some insights from you on that later. And then finally, Email Is Not Dead is the book over at Amazon. Make sure to check that out. Carly's got just a huge depth of experience there. Running the agency, knows email inside and out. Make sure to check that out. So Carly, thank you so much. Good luck at the speaking gig in the next week or two. And appreciate you being a part of ECF and coming on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was so wonderful.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help. Access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com.
zipify.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell, and also to fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.